Cutler YMX uses the Netradyne two-way camera system in all of our power units. The Netradyne cameras have more than once exonerated a driver who was perceived to be at fault, as well as saved our Cutler YMX from paying damages related to an accident. We are already seeing, just in 1 year of Netradyne, the impact of better safety scores and fewer damages and incidents in our insurance rates.
Here we are. Welcome back, Tony Mulvey.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Freightonomics, coming back from the holiday, July 4th on a Thursday this year. And to me, the 4th of July, of course, is kind of like, it's a nice break in the year. Yeah. You got this first half, two quarters, obviously, out of the way. And then the second half tends to, you know, be a different thing altogether. Yep. You kind of ramp up in the first half, then you kind of have this lull in July, and then second half tends to be where a lot of companies and businesses start really cranking things down, especially the retail side. But I think it's industrial rhythm that we've been stuck in as humans since the early 1900s, where we are, you know, programmed to kind of almost like cram everything in at the end as much as possible.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And it's interesting, right? You think about the first half of the year, you come off the end of the year high, go into this lull, then you ramp it back up, and then it's like, okay, we've maxed out.
Yep.
And then it's like, all right, now we need to take our little break, and then we do it. It's like a wave. Every year it's a wave.
It's a wave.
And it's just riding the
waves. Everything's a cycle. But welcome to Freightonomics. In the second half, we're going to talk about what the rest of the year looks like and some of the signals we're already looking at in terms of economic and, of course, transportation markets. The supply chain world continues to be a bit of a mystery in terms of how reliable is service and things like that. But to start things off, we've got a new sponsor.
We do have a sponsor.
Dine, if you saw the roll-in video, but remove the guesswork from driver management and fleet safety and start predicting your accident reduction cost savings. Netradyne's AI-enabled video safety platform corrects unsafe driving habits, recognizing and reinforcing great driving. With a green zone score, your fleet of engaged drivers will protect your bottom line. Every 50 points earned is a 14% cut to your accident rate. And driver safety and liability and insurance costs? We could have an entire show.
Absolutely. So thank you, Netradyne, for sponsoring this month's Freightonomics.
Yes.
But Zach, I've been out of the country, tried to keep up with Sonar as much as possible. But, one of the best ways to start this show is by kind of updating where we are in the market with the market in two. So I'll count you in here if you're ready.
I'm ready.
So in 3, 2, 1.
All right, let's kick things off with the OTRI, the Outbound Tender Rejection Index. I have been leaning on this to start the market update for the last probably month and a half, because I think it's the most interesting index that we have currently. And it also tells us where we are in this cycle. We just talked about cycles. Tender rejection rates mirroring the 2019 line there in orange. They spiked up over 6% for the first time since 2022. It's a big benchmark figure. Last year, we didn't get over 4% around the 4th of July. So that is a big deal. Now, it is coming back down as we expected it would coming into July. If it had stayed higher, I think we could have started talking about a sustainable shift in the market. But it is falling down, and it looks like it may go into that typical July kind of easing up for a minute pattern before we head into Labor Day in a few months. We'll see. Time will tell. Let's go to the next one. Spot rates, NTIL, a little bit inflated over 2019. Still well below the pandemic era type of spot rate environment, but it did peak up like we expected it to, and it does look like it is also on its way down. Now, breaking this down even further, let's go to the map of spot rates that we have now in our market dashboard tool. This is a heat map that tells us where rates are increasing the most in blue and decreasing the most in red. And we see that the northern tier, the Midwest, which has been one of the most well-supplied areas in the country, are seeing more of the rate increases. Now, it doesn't mean every lane is increasing out of these Midwestern markets, but some of them are, or more of them are than aren't, I guess is how to read this. And then the southern tier, really showing more of the decreases than most. This has been the hotter area of the country in red. But let's go to the last slide here, the last chart, I should say. Ontario to Denver. Watch out. Here's a spot rate crossing a contract rate. Now, this is a backhaul lane, not a well-supplied lane in by general, but it is one where spot rates are now crossing the contract line, and they are going fast.
Yeah. It's happening. I think that's the takeaway, is how fast it can change, yeah. Right? I mean, you look at this, you pull that chart back up, and you look at, I mean, the gap was widening in the early parts of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, and kind of sustained itself. And it, I mean, what? A matter of
It's a head haul lane. Yeah, this is a head haul lane, I should say. I think I said it's a back haul lane. It's a back haul market in Denver. It's a head haul lane, which means there's more freight moving that direction than coming back.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, you look at the difference. It 5 weeks, really, is the shift from, what, call it early May, when it kind of bottomed out and started inching higher, to what, the first week in June where it actually crossed.
Yeah.
And then it's sustaining itself. I think that's the more interesting part, is that it's actually, the gap is getting wider on the spot market side than it is like falling back to where that contract rate is. Yeah, I think that's the takeaway.
And Southern California has been one of the more active areas of the country. We talked about imbalances naturally occurring. We saw Atlanta really have trouble with capacity here early in the summer. And a lot of that has to do with simply that there's more equipment being pushed out into the West Coast.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you were to go look at the weighted rejection index, like the markets where you're seeing the biggest declines are in the Southeast, really. And so Atlanta, Savannah, you still see the declines in Ontario post-holiday, which makes sense because drivers likely didn't go out there ahead of the holiday, but now they're willing to go back out there, and you're seeing acceptance a lot higher just from the simple fact that their equipment is now being positioned back out there.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how, like, call it next week and the week after play out in pockets like the Southeast, where you're moving the capacity west, and at some point, this little pocket in the Southeast, or even the Midwest, the Northeast, like these pockets, doesn't have the available capacity, because it will show up in pockets as overall capacity leaves the market.
The fact that this is even occurring at this point in time, I know the Ontario to Denver lane is not one that is, it's more sensitive to capacity shortages than other lanes. It is a high cost lane. The service disruptions are higher in this lane than others in the market in general. But I think it's telling that we're seeing this occur now, and this is a pretty well served lane. I mean, in terms of like liquidity, there's a lot of density behind it. It's very challenging to go to Denver from Ontario.
Yeah.
It means that carriers are actually having some level of pricing leverage.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's the leverage is going to show up in a market like this, right? Where you're leaving a head haul market, going into a back haul market. You're not going to see the same thing going from, say, Ontario to Dallas, right? Where there's plenty of freight to be.
It's a very balanced lane.
It's the more where the greater the imbalance of the market you're departing versus headed to, the greater that imbalance is where that pricing power is really going to show up.
Exactly. So let's move on from the freight market for a second and talk about, obviously, one of the biggest economic releases that we've had this year, I would say, without being too hyperbolic.
Deflation. Deflation. I mean, I say that kind of kidding, but I mean, if you look at the headline number for the consumer price index that came out this morning, it was deflationary. It fell 0.1% month over month. It's the first time it's fallen, I don't know, I think going back to 2021, that we've seen a month over month decline. Now, the headline number year over year is still up 3%.
Right.
So,
but this is it's basically in line.
Yeah. It's what it's doing is just highlighting that the inflation data is actually moving in a direction. Mm-hmm. You're finally getting that positive, continued positive inflation data that the Fed's looking for in their interest rate cut plan. Granted, they don't use this because they use the PCE, which changes like the basket based on consumer behavior versus CPI that doesn't. Other side, now core inflation, so strip out energy and strip out food because they're more volatile in nature. It increased 0.1% month over month. So still going up, but less than what was expected. Sure. I mean, you're talking up 3.3% year over year. It's better than 6% that it was, call it this time last year or even earlier this year. I mean, where you had some of these extreme, and it's trending lower, right? It was up 0.4% month over month in March, 0.3% in April, 0.2% in May, and now 0.1%. So it's trending in the right direction. Again, that's probably more in line with what the Fed wants to see versus the headline number. But I look at this and I see there's deflation in cars and used and new vehicles. I mean, used vehicles fell 1.5% month over month. There's deflation in energy prices. They fell 2% month over month, especially gasoline down 3.7%. And it's down year over year. Shelter prices still increasing ever so slightly.
Yeah.
That's a big driver of that core inflation. It was up 0.2. It's up 5.2% year over year. And then food prices pretty stable. They've actually been increasing or accelerating. It was flat month over month in April. It was up 0.1% month over month in May and up 0.2% month over month in June. So seeing some slight increases there. But overall, I think you look at this at the top, it's a positive sign, obviously. You're seeing inflation really kind of get under control. It takes time to move to that 2% long-term target because you have to roll off months where you had 0.4% month-over-month increases, 0.6% month-over-month increases. So as those roll off, that 12-month, the target range, that 2%, is moving more in a direction.
And of course, the reason we care is because Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, has been sitting on inflation has to be under control before we start cutting rates, which of course leads to economic stimulus. As a lot of companies are sitting on their investment portfolios right now, waiting for lower interest rates so that they can start investing again.
Yeah, because there's no reason to go invest in anything else when you can go get, you know, 4.5%, 5% T-bill rates that are going to yield you in it. The idea being you're going to go invest in it, buy T-bills basically that are risk-free and yield you 5% versus, you know, hey, I'm going to make this investment and it might yield me nothing for the first few years and then it returns. But it's like there's a risk involved. What if it doesn't? And that's it frees up this cash basically for businesses to go make larger investments.
Yeah, they're trying to incentivize savings and not necessarily investment.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I think we've seen plenty of negative economic signals over the last couple of months. Yeah. And one of them, of course, being consumer credit.
Yeah, this one's probably my favorite.
Credit and debt in the United States is alarming.
I would argue it's a plague. But we've got the outstanding revolving credit here. So this is, it's lagged. It's reported on a lag. I mean, we just got May's figures recently. But what I have here, I drew from the bottom line.
This is basically credit card debt.
It's credit card debt, a revolving credit. Yeah. So, I mean, there's other lines. It's primarily credit card debt, which it makes up about 6% of total outstanding debt. So relatively small in size, but I think it's more of the trend is the alarming part.
Well, it's the consumers. It's the people that buy goods that really fuel the American economy.
Yeah. So what we've got here is what you're seeing. The bottom line there, that dashed line, is the bottom. Basically, where we were, call it April of 2011. Coming off great financial crisis, there was some level of stimulus there. People paid off a lot of debt because, I mean, savings rates ballooned. Well, so going from there to right before the pandemic, February 2020, you saw the balance, basically the total outstanding revolving debt credit increased by $275 billion, right? Not that bad. I mean, the trend line was getting more alarming there in the later, but it was low. You had a low interest rate environment. So debt was cheap.
Right.
Well, fast forward, you can see the stimulus people paid off debt during this
time. More money than they needed.
Yeah. So they paid off a lot of debt. But then, so drew the bottom, the next line there is the bottom of where we basically started to increase once again. From April of 2021 through May of 2024, the balances of outstanding revolving debt or credit has increased by $375 billion, more than the 10 years prior. And I think that is where it's the trend line of this, and factor in that you're in a higher interest rate environment. That is the concerning part. You're getting it both ends. Like, the cost of debt has increased and the amount of debt outstanding has increased. Right. And I think that's the...
This is a big risk.
Yeah, it's big in terms of dollars, in terms of like, it's different than 2008 because it's not mortgages and things like that, and non-revolving debt.
And just because you get away with a thing for a while doesn't mean that you're going to always.
Yeah.
And that's the big concern here. Now, it won't matter necessarily to the consumer economy until the banks start basically calling the debt and saying, hey, you owe me more than you have. And then things really can waterfall from there.
Yeah. I mean, the one good sign is, right? I mean, I guess the one side is typically your credit card balance is in like, I think the average credit card balance is like $6,800. We'll call it between $65,000 and $7,000. Like, relative to what it was in 2008 with the mortgage, that was, you know, what was the average mortgage? Call it $200,000. I mean, it's a very small amount on a consumer.
Sure.
Per consumer level.
15% to 20% interest rate.
It adds up very quickly. And I think that's the, at least from my perspective, like, it's not a problem till it is, but there's signs that it could create a problem, especially as the consumer starts to slow down their spending.
Well, speaking of debt, and we'll move on to the story of the week, I would call it. Debt is not necessarily, and in some sense, this story that came out, J.P. Hampstead wrote, analysis, SBA disaster loans propped up carriers prolong great freight recession, if I can say that. And the whole point of this article is simply saying that, you know, we talked about the excess capacity. Yeah. Everybody that's in transportation knows there's too much capacity right now. It is keeping rates sub cost threshold. A lot of carriers are just not able to sustain. Posing the question that, why is it that we're over 2 years later in a very depressed freight market and there's still too much capacity.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of theories and things, and this article breaks them down exquisitely well, as JP normally does. But this, it does the math for us and basically says, you know, if you want to get into all the details here, but $37 billion of these small business loans, the Small Business Association is SBA, went to transportation and warehousing, which it goes out to be about $88,000 per company. And then the math continues and says, essentially, an owner-operator that would normally pull in $91,000 a year can make about $45,000 a year and not miss a beat, and they're still online. So basically cutting in half what they need revenue-wise to maintain their business.
Yeah.
This is a tremendous amount. It was like 400,000 carriers that were potentially involved in this. Like, that is a tremendous amount of capacity that has potentially been floated by these low interest rate loans. And then, of course, pulling this all together at the end, these loans are essentially coming due. You've got equipment issues starting to pile up. You've got things that naturally will show up that these loans will then start to percolate and make it a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, when you... The SBA kind of in May basically said they're going to turn this over to the Treasury. Anything delinquent is going to go to the IRS for collection, right? Yeah. So they are coming due. I think what's interesting is, one, how the loans are collateralized, right? You didn't have to put up your primary residence. Like, you could put up your truck. So if your truck was worth, say, $100,000. Like,
$25,000 to $200,000 was, you could use your truck to collateralize.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting in itself.
Which would be the bulk of the loans, according to this.
Yeah. And then the other factor is, I mean, you look at, well, one, it was like free money because you were given an interest rate at your interest rate's 3.75%. And then the Fed raises interest rates and the Treasury bond goes from sub that to, you know, 5%, 4.57, whatever you want to look at. It's like, it's literally free money in this case because you can earn more money on the loan than what it owes you.
Yeah, you turn around and take the loan, throw it into a treasury bill.
And you're making money.
And you make money automatically.
Doing nothing.
Doing literally nothing.
And I think that's some of it too. It's like, now, to do that, you have to be fairly savvy and understand those dynamics. But I think the other factor is just like, you look at this and it's, you can continue operating, not missing a beat. And eventually, I mean, it comes to roost, but it just prolongs it. And now we're sitting in this environment that continues to be challenging. You're seeing it kind of, the changes are percolating under the surface. And you talked about it with the rejection rates. You're seeing kind of this, the market start to bubble.
It's just being more responsive, more vulnerable. Yeah. And you can tell that a lot of that is just simply due to like,
the volcano is becoming active.
Yeah. We're seeing the early warning signs that this market has some sensitivity in it. It's not turned yet. Looks like we're headed that direction. When it will flip is always the question that I get asked.
Is it going to be the Mount Vesuvius of like COVID that basically blew out?
So after reading this article, I'm more leaning towards a Mount Vesuvius. Now, it won't be a COVID Vesuvius, but it certainly will be historically large because this is talking about a situation where we have pent up ability for exits to accelerate.
Yeah.
And exits are already happening at a very high rate.
Well, faster than they were in 2019, right? I mean, if you look at every, I mean, you still had net growth in 2019, almost on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Now we're still net negative. I mean, 600 carriers a week. Yeah. I mean, I think was the most recent one was like 630 in a week was net negative. Yeah. So, I mean, to me, you have this potential for an acceleration. You don't really need most changes are demand driven. Mm-hmm. If this is the case, it's not going to be demand driven. It would be a capacity situation.
It's a total capacity situation.
And I think that's the, it's because you've had growth in demand naturally, right? The market demand grows. I mean, it may not be, it's going to grow as the economy grows to some extent, and largely it's capacity. Grown in excess of that.
Yeah. And from a good side, I mean, from the OTVI, I mean, it's grown like 9% year over year, but nobody can tell because there's still too much capacity.
So it's just a matter of
starting to see it. But one of the things that people are speculating, Craig Fuller being one of them, that could be the trigger that turns the market are hurricanes. And we just had our first landfalling one in Beryl. Now, it wasn't a major one. It was a Cat 1 at landfall. It was 5 out in the Caribbean, which looked terrifying. Nobody's pulling for a hurricane. We had Kaylee Nix on filling in for you a few weeks ago talking about hurricanes and their impact on the freight market. Hurricane Harvey, probably the last notable one that did have a pretty... If we had a... And this is where I'm at. Like, target August. End of August, Labor Day. The I's, the, you know, the H's, Harvey, Ida. These hurricanes tend to be like right in the sweet spot of really, really nasty storms that can do some serious damage. This one didn't necessarily do that level of damage, but it did have a little bit of disruptive impact to supply chain.
And I think what's interesting is we talked, you talked about, and we'll go ahead and pull up the chart because I like looking at this. It actually intrigued me with looking at the tender rejections into Houston or out of Houston.
OTRA Houston.
Yeah. Look at how flat it's been. I mean, like, if you look at the national one, you see a rapid decline. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have been on this severe decline. And you talk about some of the largest markets, Ontario, Dallas, Atlanta, Savannah. Rejection rates are all declining. Not the case in Houston.
No.
And I think that's some of it is, it kind of held it. It's not, you didn't see an increase, but it's kind of held things kind of steady at this higher level because it's like, all right, let's wait and see what actually happens versus kind of let's not put our trucks in danger when we know we can have freight other places.
2.5 million homes and businesses in the Southeast Texas without power. Yeah. These stall shipping networks. I think you really need to pay attention to any storm that approaches Houston.
Yeah.
I think is the takeaway here. Like, Houston's a big freight like center, a supply chain source, if you will. Tender rejection rates staying up high. I mean, they didn't get higher during the storm, but the fact that they're remaining elevated is a pretty big takeaway.
Yeah, I would say Houston in comparison to like, you're not going to see as well. Florida can be impacted. You're not going to see the same level of impact because Miami and Tampa and Orlando aren't major drivers of freight. Savannah would have an impact, but it would have to be almost direct hit, right? If you go further up the coast, northern South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, it's not as impactful as it is. Even if you go east in the Gulf Coast, it's they're just not...
There's not a lot of infrastructure.
They're not as major freight markets as Houston is.
Like back in the early 2000s, hurricanes had an impact because FEMA pulled all this capacity out of the market.
FEMA's gotten better at buying capacity.
FEMA's gotten a lot more efficient. You almost need a storm that is kind of like... It hits like right in a shipping hub for it to be impactful. And not that we're pulling for that by any means.
No, but it can be what has this major kind of a significant flip, switch flip in a very short amount of time.
Yeah. So here's hoping that that's not the case and that's not the reason for any kind of freight market situation. But you got to watch out for it nonetheless.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody, have a good week.